Yeah, following in a tradition of, as I've noticed, a tradition of this particular meeting, where the speaker semi-pretends to misunderstand what the organizers of the meeting ask them to talk about and then kind of, you know, changes it at will, I will join in this trend to some extent by, I was asked to talk about the metallicities in the IGM from Dunk Lyman Alpha Systems to Lyman Forest Clouds, and what I'm mostly going to concentrate on is the metallicities in these systems at high redshift, a redshift of 3. As we heard this morning, good reason for that, and as you know, as Dick pointed out, we have heard quite a bit about the metallicities already in this, you know, particular sessions this morning. However, no one, to my knowledge, has actually showed this yet. So why don't I illustrate the reason for concentrating on a high redshift with the spectrum of column densities, H1 column densities in the Lyman Alpha Forest. We now know that to a crude approximation, the Lyman Alpha Forest is well fit by a single power law with a slope of approximately minus 1.5. And as Michael said, the bulk of the H1 resides in damped Lyman Alpha systems. But at a high redshift, a redshift of 3, the bulk of the baryons reside in intermediate column density systems, 10 to the 14 to 10 to the 16, in the Lyman Alpha Forest. The mean density, just to remind you, is about here, somewhere about 10 to the 13 in column density. And this slope of the power law persists to lower column densities and actually into the underdense regions in the Lyman Alpha Forest. The reason, of course, for concentrating on high redshift is that because the bulk of the baryons exist in here and we have techniques for understanding the metallicity of the bulk of the baryons, in contrast to the lower column, to the situation at a redshift of 0, where the bulk of the IGM is likely to be very hot, and therefore trying to find observations of the metallicity in the near future, you know, apart from possible techniques of looking at line widths, may in fact turn out to be, you know, much more difficult than people think. We may have to go into observations in the X-rays, and this is going to turn out to be very difficult. Of course, at contrast, at the high redshift, we can use simple absorption line techniques to get at the same answer here. And of course, as everyone knows, this revolution in our understanding of a redshift of 3 has come about from mostly from the high-res spectrograph to date on the Keck telescope. Of course, the VLC is about to come online. And just, of course, this is indeed everyone's favorite spectrum. So here's my take on the Q1422 plus 231, the bright-lensed quasar at a redshift of 3.6. This is, in fact, the state-of-the-art observation of these high-resolution observations, high-signal-to-noise observations of quasar absorption light spectrum to date. This is about approximately 20 hours of Keck 1 high-res integration time, resulting in a spectrum for this quasar, the signal-to-noise greater in excess of a couple of hundred redwood of the Lyman alpha line. And of course, as people now know, we're now in a position to talk routinely about a carbon-4 forest of easily identified carbon-4 lines corresponding to the Lyman alpha forest, redwood, bluewood of Lyman alpha. A bit more detail from a somewhat earlier version of this spectrum, not quite such a sensitive one. First of all, what I'm showing here is a chunk of the spectrum blown up Lyman alpha at the same redshift, the corresponding Lyman beta, and at the same redshift, the corresponding carbon-4. And what you can see is that almost all the systems which are saturated in Lyman alpha and in Lyman beta, the saturated in Lyman alpha brings you to a column density, H1 column density of 3 times 10 to the 14. If you also saturate in Lyman beta, that becomes 1.6 times 10 to the 15. And lines associated with these strong-ish Lyman alpha lines show easily identified carbon-4. But there are, of course, other carbon-4 lines to be seen. Carbon-4 is, of course, an easy line to use observationally because it's a doublet, and therefore there's absolutely no doubt that you're detecting carbon-4. Now with the new spectrum, the exquisite signal to noise allows us to go even fainter in carbon-4 lines. What you see up here is carbon-4, 2 times 10 to the 12 to 10 to the 13. These are obviously easily detectable carbon-4. But if you work down with an atlas of these lines, you can work down to column densities as low as 7 times 10 to the 11. And although it's small, it's easily detectable because, in fact, you have a doublet, and there's, in fact, no doubt that this is indeed carbon-4. The fact that we have this greater sensitivity from this new spectrum allows us to now plot the distribution of carbon-4 column densities, the number distribution of these, column density distribution of these, down to column density underneath, below 10 to the 12, 10 to the 11.7. And the main result here is that the spectrum is again well fitted by a single power law with a slope of -1.4 to 1.5, which now, however, extends all the way down to these lowest column density systems, which are essentially in the void. Okay. Previous data from our older spectrum turned over here, but that was considered probably an incompleteness limit, which is now verified, of course, with the new spectrum. Again, the two faintest points here are incompleteness corrected to lie on and end up lying on the single power law slope here. The fact that the slope of this carbon-4 column density power law is identical to the H1 power law slope means that, this is the first implication, that you can get the two spectra to sit on top of one another by using just a single carbon-4 to H1 ratio, which is approximately -2.5. And I should say this is work with Sarah Ellison Yopshe at graduate students at Cambridge and Max Fittini. And Sarah's done most of the work in analyzing this new spectrum. Now you can go from the overall statement that I just made, looking at the spectrum of the column densities, to seeing what the situation is when you look at individual clouds, individual carbon-4 systems, rather, in the forest. And that's just illustrated here, where using a selection that is selected where Lyman alpha is saturated, which is, again, the cutoff of the NH1 cutoff, 3 times 10 to the 14, there's 75 of these systems, simply plotted with redshift here. This is the carbon-4 cutoff of 5 times 10 to the 11. What you see is that above a column density of 10 to the 12, if you cut off the carbon-4 column density at 10 to the 12, we, in fact, detect 50% of these systems in carbon-4. If you reduce this limit to 5 times 10 to the 11, that detection goes up to 75%, which tends to suggest that the ones that we were missing were simply as a result of sensitivity issues, and as the sensitivity improved, we simply picked them up. You can go even further and ask what is the ratio of carbon-4 to H1 for the actual ratio of carbon-4 to H1 for each of these individual systems. We can do that because for a subset of these systems we have enough spectral coverage that we can trace the Lyman alpha, trace the Lyman series down to higher order Lyman lines, and therefore make a robust determination of the Lyman alpha column density. And the results here are shown, for this subset are shown here. Here again is the carbon-4 detection limit. We in fact detect, as I just said before, we detect almost everything. A few of these that are not detected are placed on the limit here. The main result here is that, again, most of the systems lie, the carbon-4 to H1, somewhere between 10 to the minus 3 and 10 to the minus 2. Except for these down here, which are the higher column density partial Lyman limit systems round about an H1 column density of 10 to the 17. Okay. What's superimposed on here are ionization models from Jacqueline Bergeron's ionization parameters minus 1, minus 2, minus 3, calculated for metallicity minus 2 of solar. And you can see that most of the results have fitted quite well with ionization parameters between minus 1 and minus 2 with this metallicity, okay? Except for the partial Lyman limit systems, which are intrinsically lower ionization systems, so they cluster down here. For parameters, ionization parameters both larger and smaller than this range shown here, then you would expect a smaller carbon 4 to H1, and therefore you would need a larger metallicity. Now that we have the column density distributions, I've talked about carbon 4, but we can also do it with silicon 4. It's made it possible to determine the metal density, the density of metals in the universe at these redshifts, so at a mean redshift for this calculation of 3.18, in a completely model independent fashion, in a phenomenological fashion. And that is just illustrated here. You determine the omega in a particular ion simply by integrating underneath these column density distributions over the redshift path length. When you do that, this the simple integration, you get an omega of carbon 4, which is about 2 times 10 to the 10 to the minus 8, and omega silicon 4, which is a bit less, 7 times 10 to the minus 9. Of course, to get from this simple integration to an overall density of metals, you have to do two things, two rather major things. First of all, you have to calculate or try and somehow do the ionization correction between carbon 4 and total carbon, silicon 4 and total silicon. And then, of course, you have to ask what the rest of the metals in the forest are doing as well. The ionization correction is also done phenomenologically. I'm not showing the data, but we do have a limited amount of data on other ionization systems, which leads us to give a sort of rough correction of carbon 4 to carbon of a factor of 2 and silicon 4 to silicon of a factor of 2 also. The way we did the correction for the other metals in the forest was to simply scale the alpha process elements with silicon and the iron peak elements with carbon. And when you do that, you get an overall omega in metals, a metal density of about 3.3 times 10 to the minus 7. For some purposes, such as comparing the star formation rates, this number, omega metals by itself, is probably what you want to know. However, if you want to find out what the metallicity relative to solar is at these redshifts, then you have to divide by the baryon density. And these are just the results from the range, plausible range of omega baryon H squared determined from the D2H measurements. Obviously, everyone's clustering around the high end, the Wilson-Teichler end, corresponding to low D2H. But just for completeness, I've included the whole plausible range. This is the John Webb result, 10 to the 10 to the minus 4. And it's just possible that there might be variation. It's not been proved, but there might be variation D to H, so I've included the whole range for completeness. But if you use the high, the recognized high omega B to H from the Bose-Titan measurement, then you get a metallicity relative to solar of about minus 3. Oh, and just as a cuteness, it occurred to me that, I kind of have to plug the, to some extent, plug the high D2H values. One possible advantage of having a high D2H and therefore a low omega baryon would be that at low redshift you could hide more metals in the, put more metals in the overall IGM, right, without violating the star formation rate constraints, and therefore perhaps bring the low overall IGM and the clusters more into agreement with one another. I agree it's not perhaps a very direct reason for assuming that that might be true, but it's a fun one. So that was one way to do it. And what I'm showing here is that you can also, or just illustrating the results of the fact that you can also approach this problem from the other direction, as we heard this morning, and see what the models have to say about the predictions of what carbon 4-H1 should be in the forest. I assume Martin will talk a great deal more about this, but basically what one does is assume assume an ionizing spectrum with overdensity and predict what the carbon 4-H1 ratio would be as a function of overdensity and temperature. And what you get is, what I'm showing, the plausible range that you get out of this is a mean of -2.5 with a range of about 0.5 on either side of this. This is a completely different methodology from what I was talking about before, so it's reassuring that they end up in roughly the same place. Okay. So moving on to figure out what the actual range in what I should emphasize, of course, is the important point, that by doing this modeling, you're able to show that carbon 4-H1 is a result of actual changes in actual variations in metallicity. Okay, it's not just variations in carbon 4-H1. If you want to get that out from the observations, then one useful thing to do is move to slightly higher H1 column densities into the partial Lyman limit systems where you have a non-saturated Lyman limit line, and this implies an H1 column density of about 10 to the 17. And so let me talk a little bit about these. That's useful because at the higher density you have better sensitivity, of course, and you also pick up more ionization stages, so you can do your ionization correction better. And here's just an example of one of these partial Lyman limit systems. We now have observations for 14. This is the quasar 0956 plus 122 at redshift of 3.22. Here's the broad saturated Lyman alpha, carbon 2, silicon 3, silicon 4. In this particular system, silicon 3 is a dominant ionization stage. Carbon 2 is very weak. And you can see how easy it is to figure out what the abundance is as a function of velocity component actually are. And just to get on to the conclusions above those, this is conclusions for 8 of these. As I say, we've done 14. All systems have metals. The silicon metallicity is generally the systems have a range of metallicity. The silicon metallicity from about few times 10 to the minus 4 to about few times 10 to the minus 2. Carbon generally a bit lower. In fact, some of these are not detected. Okay, and no particular trend with optical depth with column density. So, as I said, I just plotted these on here, and so the result is that you can see that they show roughly the same range of metallicity as the Lyman alpha forest. The result is that from about 14 and a bit to 17 and a bit in the Lyman alpha forest, you're seeing roughly the same range in mean metallicity and range in metallicities. Now, this doesn't change particularly. We don't actually know about it in here, but it doesn't change particularly until you get to the damped Lyman alpha systems, 10 to the 20, 21 and a half, where it's a bit higher, about minus 2 to minus 1. I assume Artie is going to talk more about damped Lyman alpha systems. I'm also running out of time, but I haven't said anything interesting. So let me just say very, very quickly that a lot of work has been done on the metallicities in damped Lyman alpha systems over the last few years. Here I show compilations from Bettini, actually Bettini, Al, 1999, Prochaska and Wolf. Okay. And here is just to show what I said at the redshift of 3, the metallicities about 10 to minus 1 to 10 to minus 2. The interesting thing that has been shown over in you know, in the last few years in these systems, is that, as I say, Artie will talk more about this, the redshift evolution, contrary to what the models say, appears to be very small indeed. Okay? Both at low redshift, where you would expect the damped ion alpha system metallicity to be rising, and at high redshift, where Prochaska and Wolf have combined data with previous data of Liu et al. To show these are the common density weighted metallicities in the low redshift bin and the high redshift bin, and in fact extremely similar. So very little column density evolution in the damped ion alpha systems. Okay. Finally, I've left myself only 5 minutes to talk about it, which is a shame. So we know about this. So finally, one of the most interesting things I think that's been done recently is to extend this down into slightly lower column density regimes. You might wonder why bother, because we know about about vast decades of the Lyman alpha forest here. But as we saw this morning, it's precisely in this regime here that it begins to get really interesting, because the predictions of the models say that the metallicity should begin to drop very quickly. And I just saw the Chen and Ostreicher model here. Just to illustrate this, is a redshift 3, 2, 0.5, and 1, where at the low over densities, there's a very sudden drop toward the high redshift and the low densities in mean metallicity. And of course, we saw from David Weinberg this morning that perhaps there are issues of resolution in these models, so it might be nice if people would address this afterwards. This is just shown also over here, where concentrate on this one, which is the lowest density panel, again the same redshift, where an attempt was made to see what the agreement is with observations. And with old observations of Liu et al. 98, there seemed to be a crude agreement between these models and that. What I would like to show you, though I've left myself very little time, is that perhaps this is not necessarily so. Traditionally, these observations were done, very low sensitivity observations were done by stacking portions of spectrum to improve the signal-to-noise and therefore improve the sensitivity. A few years ago, Len invented another way of doing this, which is to simply correlate pixel by pixel the Lyman alpha and carbon-4 optical depths. This has been taken to a high pitch of perfection by Sarah Ellison, the thesis at Cambridge, who has analyzed this very high signal-to-noise spectrum of 1422 I was talking about. That's shown here. The actual spectrum, the median tau Lyman alpha against median carbon 4 is shown up here. Sarah has tried to find out what's happening here by doing simulations of the spectrum. These are taking the actual observed Lyman alpha forest and adding carbon 4 to H1 into it, carbon 4 lined into it with various formulae. This takes, top panel just shows you what happens if you just use the actual observed carbon 4 lines in this system. And you can see that doesn't particularly match the observations at all. In the middle panel, what she's done is try to figure out, with tweakers, how much extra carbon 4 you'd have to put in and where you'd have to put it in. The middle panel, what she's done is added carbon 4 to the strong Lyman alpha lines, add a carbon 4 of 10 to the 12 uniformly, and you can see that matches the upper end of the column density range quite well, but still fails to match the lower end, where it flattens out due to systematic effects, so we find out any other way what's going on. Okay. In the bottom panel, what she's done is, in addition to this, at the high H1 column density, she's added a uniform carbon 4 to H1 of minus 2.6 for all the low column density lines less than 10 to the 14.5. And you see, finally, that brings it into agreement with the observations at the low column density end. So what this is suggesting is, if I can find my summary again, am I out of time? and then some. A minute. That's amazing. Take me a minute to find this. I lost it. Anyway, yeah. I just plotted that result on here. You can see immediately that it's very similar to the higher column density Lyman alpha forest clouds. In contradiction to what the models say, I really don't think that our observations show that there is a vast drop-off in metallicity at these slightly lower column densities. In fact, since you would expect at these lower densities that carbon-4 should actually be decreasing, what this might naively show is that, in fact, the metallicity is rising here. That's almost certainly not the case. That's what's almost certainly happening is that the spectrum, the ionizing spectrum, is Galaxian, and there simply aren't enough high-energy photons to ionize carbon-4 to carbon-5. And so carbon-4 stays the dominant ionization stage down even to low densities. So I think I'm out of time, so yes. Perfect. So I just leave this up as a summary. The summary being that we now know about metallicities in the Lyman alpha forest, at least at a redshift of 3, and there's a tremendous similarity over many orders of magnitude except for the damp Lyman alpha system.
Your results seem to suggest that the damp Lyman alpha systems may in fact be a stage in the evolution of a self-enriching entity.
Yeah.
And when we see it at different redshifts, we're simply seeing the same phase of evolution of those objects at different, that might have formed at different epochs. But I still see from your plot a difference between the damp Lyman alpha systems and the Lyman alpha forest. You weren't suggesting that I should draw a straight line across that.
No, absolutely not. I mean, a damp Lyman alpha system, you expect star formations. I mean, it's obviously going to enrich itself.
Right. It would be
actually,
hard to self-enrich.
That's my favorite model for what's happening to the Moriarty has his own favorite model.
The calculations by several people, originally I guess it was Martin Rees and other people, but Nick Nedden and I made it, and others, did you really expect a population 3 early on, which would have been everywhere and therefore contaminated everything? It's when molecular hydrogen is the cooling. And that brings things to a level of about 10 to the minus 3 of solar.
Yeah.
So I'd be surprised if the floor were much below that.
Pretty definitive, Jerry. I think it's actually much more up in the air than that.
Well, the gap is the middle of the middle. But there's a fair variance. This thing for the mean, the low metallicity system. The prediction is that about 10 to minus 3.5, some large areas are in place, somewhere
will be going somewhere. But we could test that. So if we find a lot of higher in the limits where we'd be very sensitive, down at minus 4, so that's a contradiction with the prediction?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't think you'd throw out the theory on the basis of that prediction.
No, I think that it's very hard not to have a population 3 if you have molecular...
Well, that's what I say, that makes it inhomogeneous. The average has to be that way, but it could be inhomogeneous.
So I don't have to do any more stacking or pixel by pixel correlations, because it's not going to get me anywhere. Thank you.
I was wondering if you could comment more on actually the elemental abundance ratios that you may or may not be actually finding in these systems. Do you see enhanced alpha element switching?
Yes, of course. Like in low metallicity, it's almost exactly the same. It's a factor of 3.
And I think this has implications for a possible population 3 in terms of the initial mass function that you might have had there.
Yeah.
Probably the same.
Even at, this is shared, but even at 10 to the 14th, actually the little Lyman alpha 30 kilometer per second clouds in the history, they still could contribute. So it's not clear from that Ellison et al. Result that this is therefore the ambient medium. That's sort of the intercloud medium. I mean, it still could be just associated with dwarf little dwarf galaxies.
Yeah.
Well, that depends upon the that value, exactly what the range is. Well, I guess we'll have more discussion of this after the next talk, which you note that we're switching topics now to mental enrichment. So I think we have something
I didn't know quite what to make after that, but in a sense.